So, Romans 1. I wonder why you're here this morning in church. I wonder why you've come. I wonder what you've come here expecting. Perhaps you've come just because it's what you always do and what you like to do on a Sunday morning. Perhaps you felt the pressure from friends and family. Perhaps you come because you like to read from the Bible and hear God's word, and you expect to hear something from the Bible that would encourage you or challenge you. Perhaps it's just nice to have a bit of downtime in the busyness of the week. But have you come expecting to meet God? Have you come expecting to worship him? Or do you think that that's just something that that serious Christians do, that the thought of anything supernatural going on in a meeting like this is something you don't really want to consider? Well, it's a theme of worship that I want us to unpick today with looking at what Paul writes here at the beginning of his letter to the Romans. And we see from what Paul writes here that worship isn't something foreign and alien, but rather it is something that everybody engages with. It's something that everybody does. And the issue isn't whether we worship. The issue is what we worship. Or to be perhaps more precise, who we worship. And that's the challenge that, with God's help, I want to bring to us this morning. Who do we worship? Because we all worship someone or something. So let's just take that thought for the moment to begin our sermon. What do we mean by worship? How can we say that everybody worships? Isn't worship just singing and praying, bowing down? Isn't it just a religion? Well, no. The definition of worship says this. It says to show fear or reverence, to honour something or someone, to praise, glorify and adore them. And yes, that is often towards a god. And we look around and we see that the world is full of religions. The world is full of gods. And surely doesn't that tell us something about mankind? No, the Bible tells us this in Ecclesiastes 3, that God has put eternity into man's heart. We read in the book of Genesis when man and woman were first created that God created them to have a relationship with him, that they were created to know him. That we're created in God's image, not like the animals. We are created to worship God. And therefore we see all around us that everybody worships, because it is how God has made us. It's what he's put into our nature. It's almost like, that bowling ball. I've got to be careful what I say here. I'm not quite at the age to do bowls yet. But for those of you who may like to do bowls, that bowl has a bias in it, doesn't it? It will always veer to one side or another. It just has that bias. God has made us with that bias, that nature, to worship. And therefore we see all around us that men and women will worship maybe a god, but maybe not. Maybe you're thinking, well, no, that's not me. Religion isn't me. God isn't me. So what is it that you worship? Perhaps we need to look at the root of the word worship to perhaps unpick it a bit more. Worship is when we acknowledge something of worth. When we acknowledge something of worth. What is it in our lives? What is it in your life that you acknowledge as worthy? What things of worth do you have in your life that your life shows that you deem as worthy? That you give your time to, that you give your energies to, that you live for? Perhaps it may not be God. Perhaps it may not be a God. Perhaps it's something or someone else. But everybody worships. Everybody worships. And we see here from Paul's letter to the Romans that there are really two choices when it comes to what we worship. We either worship the creation or we worship the Creator. We either worship creation or the Creator. Look here, verse 22 of chapter 1. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. And then again in verse 25. Because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator. Now, I don't know about you, but when I first read those verses, they seem very foreign and far removed from my experience of life. I remember when I was young and used to hear the Ten Commandments read out, that second commandment about not having any idols. I could sit there quite smugly during that. Because when it says not making a carved image in any likeness, not bowing down or serving anything that's created, well, I used to be able to think, well, I don't do that. I've never made an idol and bowed down and worshipped it. I'm not there worshipping a god that looks like a bird or an animal or a reptile. Yes, we may not physically bow down to those things. We may not go and offer a gift to a statue. But when we remember what worship is, when worship is acknowledging and showing that something is of worth, when it's giving reverence and honor to something in our lives, perhaps we realize that this truth is a little bit closer to home than it first seemed. What do we actually worship? What do we acknowledge as being worthy and of worth in our lives? Let me give you a few examples. But before I do, let me say this, that these things in their rightful place can be good, can be beneficial and are enjoyable. But the problem becomes when these things take over our lives, and when we live for these things, when we worship these things, when these things are the one thing that we consider of more worth, of more value than anything else in our lives. Because that is not what they have been made to do. Here's the first thing that we can possibly worship. Perhaps it's the most common. Ourselves. How much of what do we do for ourselves? The decisions that we make, the reason for us working and working hard, the reason we have friends, the reason that we want things. How much of it is just for us to satisfy our own desires? How often do we think of others in our lives? When we spend hours in front of the mirror getting ready in the morning, is it thinking of others or is it thinking of ourselves and how we want to appear to other people? How much of our lives is dictated and governed by what we think of ourselves and what we want others to think of us? Perhaps it can be relationships. Again, good, wholesome, beneficial in their right place. Do we put our other halves on a pedestal that they just cannot live up to? Do we love them and cherish them and expect them to be so wonderful and perfect and loving in return that when they disappoint us, it's crushing? Do we spend our whole lives devoting ourselves perhaps to partners, perhaps to our children and family, only to find that we're disappointed when they fail us or when someone else takes over their affections? It's very easy for us to worship the creation, to worship things that have been made, whether it's other people, whether it's ourselves, whether it's the things that we do, success in maybe jobs. When we consider maybe how much of our time we spend working, when the things we sacrifice for our jobs, the things we sacrifice maybe for promotion, for more income. Is that what drives you? Is that what you're living for? Is that what you worship? Is that what defines you? If someone was to ask you what you are, what would be the first thing that you say? Would you say that you're a father, a husband, a plumber? An engineer? What is it that you define yourself by? What is it that you worship? What is it that drives your life? What is it that it is most worthy in your lives? There may be those of you sat here this morning and you know that God isn't the one that you worship. As we've read about the God of the Bible this morning, as we've sung to him, as we've learned about him, perhaps you know that God isn't on the throne of your life, that it isn't God that is more worthy of anything else in your life. Perhaps even now, as you're sat here in church, you're not thinking about him. You're thinking about Sunday roast or what you're going to do this afternoon or what's coming up in the week. Legitimate concerns, maybe. Legitimate worries, yes. But if these things become all that we consider as worthy, if these things are what we worship, then they have taken the wrong place in our life. Perhaps though you're sat here as a Christian and you think, well, it's okay. I know that God is my God. I'm here at church. I've come expecting to hear something from his word. I put him first in my decisions. I know that Sunday is his day and I'm going to keep that special today. Yes, he's God over my family and I trust him to look after them. I give some of my money to him. But not my free time. Not my Friday evenings or my Saturday mornings. That's the one part of my life that I want to keep hold of. Or perhaps it's a particular relationship that you want to keep going, that you want to maintain, that God isn't going to intrude on. You see, as Christians, we can try and bring other things in to share God's throne. Other things in other aspects of our lives. Where we don't want God to rule. Where we don't want God to be worshipped. Are we guilty of what Paul speaks to his readers of here? Of worshipping the creature rather than the creator? We each need to examine our own lives to see what we count as most worthy. In a moment, I want us to look at the Creator. I want us to see why Paul tells us here that God is worthy of being worshipped. But before we do, one more thing. We have a really stark reminder here of why worshipping the creation is so pointless and so disappointing. We see here verse 21. For although they knew God and did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, they became futile in their thinking. Their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, verse 22, they became fools. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their heart to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves. You see, when we live our lives worshipping things other than God, we think that it will bring success and freedom and power, wealth and honor. But God says, no, they're going to bring the exact opposite. They will bring futility and darkness and dishonor. Because you see, these things that we might put instead of God, these things that we worship instead of God, just can't satisfy. We may live for money, but we never have enough. We always want more. There's always something or someone else to aspire to. And it can take over and become all that we live for. Do we start to be dishonest and cheat? And take things maybe that aren't ours and bring dishonor on ourselves and our family. With relationships, we can expect too much, demand too much, and leave disappointed because we expect people to be perfect. We worship them and love them as if they're God, but they're never going to be able to do that. They're never going to be able to satisfy like God does. And when we worship ourselves, what a mess we get into. We start pretending to be someone that we're not. Impressing everybody and no one. Doing more and more outrageous things to fit in and to keep up the charade. But perhaps you know already the emptiness of worshipping the creation. Perhaps you know that it just disappoints, that it's futile, that it brings dishonor. What did Jesus say? He said, don't lay up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys. Isaiah the prophet said this as well. He said, come everyone who thirsts, come to the waters. He who has no money, come buy and eat. You know, Jesus met someone when he was alive on this earth. He met a woman by the side of a well who worshipped relationships. She'd gone through five partners and was now with someone else and had left a trail of bad reputation and broken relationships along the way. When Jesus spoke to her, he offered her something that none of those relationships could bring, none of those relationships could fulfill. He offered her living water. He offered her himself as someone that would satisfy, as someone that would quench her thirst. Because we see here in Romans, we see all through Scripture, that we shouldn't be worshipping the creatures. We shouldn't be worshipping creation. Rather, we should be worshipping the Creator. Because He alone is worthy to be worshipped. He alone is worthy of our praise. He alone can satisfy. All these other things will bring dishonor, futility, darkness, disappointment. But God does not. Let me just pick up a few things here from this first chapter in Romans that remind us of what God is like, why He is worthy to be worshipped. What do we see of God? We see that He has eternal power and that He is the Creator. Verse 20, for His invisible attributes, namely His eternal power and divine nature. Verse 25 that we've read already, they've worshipped the creature rather than the Creator. Colin very helpfully had that illustration for us earlier on as he spoke to the children, talking about creation and how it speaks to us of God's power. his attributes. This is our God. This is the God of the Bible. Not the God who has to spend hours creating something, but the God who can speak a word and bring this world into being. You see, we look for power, we look for honor, but we look in the wrong places. We might get it for a moment, but it passes and fades and is superseded, but never with God. His power, here we read, is eternal, never fading, never superseded, never ending. Perhaps we think it's our English nature to back losers and to feel loyal to the underdogs. But my friends, we should not do that in our lives. We should not do that with our worship. We should be worshiping God, who is eternally powerful. The God who is the creator. You know, perhaps you like to go to art galleries and look at great masterpieces. Perhaps you like to look at the mechanics of how an engine works. We all see beauty in different places, don't we? But how silly it would be to see a great painting and to be sat next to the artist and to just completely ignore them and disregard them. How silly it would be to be looking at an engine and see how it works and yet just ignore the engineer who's made it. To wonder at the thing that has been made without taking account of the maker. Creation screams out to us that there is a God. That is how God has made it. And yet in our foolishness and darkness, so often we focus on what has been made rather than the one who has made it. Oh, my friends, let me plead with you this morning. Worship the Creator. Yes, his creation is wonderful. Yes, the things that he gives us are great. But do not put them in the place of God in your life. Worship the God who has eternal power, the God who has made these things. We see also here that God is divine. There, verse 20 again, that we've already read, his divine nature. And verse 21, what are we reminded of there? That God is God. That God is God. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God. Our God is Lord of lords, King of kings. There is no one over him. There is no one to whom he is answerable. He is God. We do not come to the Bible and find a multitude of gods. We do not find gods who are only God over a particular sphere of the world or over a particular aspect of life. No, this God, our God of the Bible, is the God of heaven and earth. He is divine. He is all-powerful. He is all-knowing. He is God. Who else should we worship? Who else should we praise? Who else should we honor? And yet we see something remarkable here. Our God has great power. Our God is the great creator. Our God is divine. He is God. But how does this God choose to use his power? Let us look at verse 16 as we come to a close. For I am not ashamed of the gospel, that means good news, for it is the power of God for salvation. To everyone who believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. You know, when we're guilty of worshipping and living for ourselves, we want others to think well of us. We hide the truth. We don't want others to find out what we really like, what we really think. There are many religions that approach their gods like that. Many religions where people come to their gods and offer sacrifices and gifts to try and appease him, hoping that their God won't know what they're really like, hoping that still their God might accept them. But what do we read of the God of the Bible here? That this great God of power, of eternal power, this great creator, uses his power to save. It is the power of God for salvation. You see, our God doesn't require us to hide what we're like. Our God doesn't want our works and our best efforts. He knows what we're like. He knows how sinful we are. He knows how we fail. He knows how futile and dark and dishonorable we can be. And yet in his love and mercy and with his great power, saves people like you and me. He grants that gift of faith so that we can believe. So that we can be made righteous in his sight, not by what we do, but what he has already done. This is why our God is worth worshipping. Because we don't have to hide away from him. We have to come and just confess our sin to him. And say, Lord, have mercy on me. Forgive me. Make me righteous because I cannot be righteous myself. What a God this is. That even though he knows what we're like, even though he knows our hearts, he comes and uses his power for salvation. And we see it when we see Jesus there on the cross. God made a man, dying the death that we should die, so that we can be forgiven. Prophet Micah said this, "Who is a God like you, pardoning sin and passing over transgression of the remnant of his inheritance?" My friends, who do you worship? What is it that you live your lives for? What is it that it is of most worth in your life? Can I encourage and exhort you? Do not live for creation. Do not worship the things that are made, good though they be. Worship the Creator, the eternal God, who in his power has made salvation possible for us. To him be the praise and the glory. Amen.